Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:31 PM and that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is January 9th. I thought we'd kick off today and look at Asia to begin with, at least. And the A-share index was pushing on to a new 9-month high, but the CSI 300, which is the index that futures are based on, is pushing on to almost a new 2-year high. And this is the resolution, potentially, of what has been a very prolonged period of underperformance by the mainland Chinese market. It's all predicated on the continued provision of stimulus. It's modest in nature relative to the size of the stimulus that was put in after the, well, during the financial crisis. But at least it is stimulus rather than contraction. And it's also looking increasingly likely that the policy of trying to countermand the influence of the shadow banking sector has run its course at this stage. The broader pattern, however, is not simply about China. It's about the wider region and the relative value play that I think is starting to animate investor interest. When, for example, we look at the Hang Seng, I think the most important thing that it's done in months has been to bounce in here today, because the choppy advance that we saw from August through until this week was, the characteristics of it were failed upside breaks, but holding the progression of higher reaction lows and rather extraordinary volatility. The size of the bounce we had from the beginning of December was larger than the others, but more importantly than that, the breakout has held. And that is something that is quite different to what we saw between or at the peak in November and the peak in September. It potentially suggests that this period of volatile, choppy trading for the Hang Seng has also reached its conclusion, and we could potentially be treated to a better performance going forward. That doesn't mean that the street protests in Hong Kong are going to end, but you don't buy the country, you buy the stocks, and the vast majority of the constituents of the Hang Seng are not particularly reliant on what happens in Hong Kong. The exception, of course, would be the HSBC. But Tencent or AIA Group, for example, are not particularly reliant on Hong Kong or indeed any of the Chinese banks or mobile phone companies. When we then think about what else is going on in the region, we've had a really quite impressive rebound by the Nikkei, and that has the size of the upward dynamic we saw in here today, 535 points, has confirmed near-term support. It, I think, really confirms that what we've seen over the course of the last 2 months has been nothing more than some consolidation in the region of the upper side of the 2-year range, and that the surprises are likely to be on the upside, that it's, I think, it is more likely than not that we're going to see a sustained break up and out of what I've been characterizing as a first step above the base. And that base formation is incredibly lengthy. If we consider the fact that the Nikkei has been trading below the 20,000 level since 1992 and only broke upwards in 2017, well, the strong likelihood here is that we are back in a demand-dominated environment, that we could quite easily see a return to outperformance by Japan. And the second section index was also in positive territory, and the most important thing that it has done has been to break the 2-year downtrend, well, almost 2-year downtrend. This has been a lead indicator, more often than not, for the wider market. It has not yet been able to break on the upside, and we might anticipate that it should be breaking on the upside if it is a lead indicator, but it has certainly broken its pattern of underperformance. I think it's worth keeping an eye on the banking sector in Japan as well, and it has also broken its downtrend. So the downtrend in the banking sector was much more pronounced than we saw in the wider market, but at least it is now back above the trend mean, and it does look like we've seen a low of at least near-term, but potentially medium-term significance as well. Then I think it's also worth taking a look at Taiwan, because it has certainly been benefiting from the outperformance of Taiwan Semiconductor. It was well off its lows for the week, and it continues to look like a rather consistent staircase step sequence uptrend. There is obviously some question about what the result of the upcoming election is going to be, and whether that is going to usher in a pro-China or anti-China administration. But the broader picture here is of a semiconductor sector that is certainly benefiting from the hiatus in the trade war and also renewed demand. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index was in positive territory in here today, despite the fact that it closed below its open, and it remains in a reflationary environment, despite the fact that we've got a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean. The Indian market was also really very positive in here today and has bounced rather impressively from the 12,000 level. Now, I would contrast the rather than looking at the time frame, but the consistency of the trend has changed again. This is quite similar to what we saw with the Hang Seng. The characteristic of the Japanese, excuse me, of the Indian stock market over the last 2 years has been failed upside breaks, but the sequence of higher reaction lows has held. Now we're starting to see that the breakout is holding. It is holding support around the 12,000 level, where that level had previously been resistance, both in the middle of 2019 and in the third quarter of 2018. This is a rather significant change. And here also, I think it is important to pay attention to the banking sector. Banks have also confirmed on the upside and bounced impressively from the 35,000 level. So this is holding out the prospect of additional upside here for the Indian market. I think one of the things that would have curtailed investor interest in India would have been a pop on the upside for oil prices, but oil has sustained the decline that we saw yesterday. There was obviously a little bit of steadier action in here today, not least because of the size of the downward dynamic we saw yesterday. But I think we would have to stretch in order to make a really bullish forecast for oil in the absence of a very clear and concrete geopolitical threat. Then I think it's when we look at the South Korean market, it has broken its downtrend. It went down in a pretty consistent manner for all the way through 2018 and most of 2019, but it has now found support in the region of the trend mean, and it has now put in a higher reaction low above that bounce from the trend mean as well. The return to performance of Samsung Electronics is, I think, noteworthy. And it pushed on to a new high in nominal terms in here today. When we go back and look at that over the long term, it has been one of the most incredible uptrends anywhere, and it is now renewing on the upside. They reported in here today that they're getting better prices for some of their products. So that ability to pass on higher prices is obviously helping to support the share in here. But of course, the speed with which we've had this move in a large number of these markets, that is suggestive both of the underweight position that a lot of people had, the high cash levels that a lot of funds found themselves in at the end of last year, and short covering, which has been a very significant factor, considering that a lot of commentary was about a recession taking place last year. It's not looking likely that it's going to be in the first half of this year or even in all of this year. But the kind of action we're seeing now is late cycle. And it is late in the cycle when we anticipate that accelerations are most likely. I think when we then go back and before I move on to other markets, I think it is worth just keeping an eye on the Singapore market, because it has been so very range bound for all of the last year, and even that range is within a much lengthier and very volatile ranging phase over the course of the last decade. If it can break the downward bias and the sequence of lower rally highs over the last 2 years, I think there is the potential that Singapore can play catch up with some of the markets that have already broken on the upside in the Asian region. But we don't have confirmation of that just yet. But I think it's logical that there isn't any real particular reason why Singapore should be underperforming in such a profound manner. The Indonesian market has also held this sequence of lower rally highs over the last year, and it is potentially now in the process of breaking that sequence. The Vietnamese market had broken downwards towards the end of last year, and it has been steadying towards the lower side of this range over the last 12 months. It needs to do better than that, though, but I think it is likely it will do when we see that these breakouts we're seeing in the bigger markets in Asia will eventually translate down into some of the smaller markets. The bigger picture here is the consensus in fundamental analysis circles is the potential for upside on Wall Street is constrained by high valuations. But that, I think, refuses to pay due consideration to the fact that the size of the Fed's balance sheet has risen by $400 billion in the last 4 months. $100 billion in stimulus a month is significant. And it is the kind of thing that helps to support the liquidity-fueled rally that investors have been treated to for all of the last decade. When we then go back and look at the consistency of the trend, well, we can see three examples now of lengthy ranging phases that have given way to very impressive breakouts. And the defining characteristic of the breakouts following these lengthy ranging phases has been their persistence. I would say that the steepness of the breakout that we've seen on Wall Street is something a little different from the breakouts we saw in 2013 and 14 and in 16 and 17. But other than that, there is no real sign that it is over. Most particularly, when we look at the consistency of the move up from October, well, we have this sequence of ranges, one above another, and the most recent of those, short term as it was, has now been resolved on the upside. These kinds of trends become really rather easy to monitor, because as long as it is trending and ranging, we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. A very clear downward dynamic that breaks the sequence of higher reaction lows, well, then that would hold out the prospect that we may be in for a process of mean reversion. But as long as we continue to see the market breaking out and ranging, and those ranges being one above another, then this is still a consistent trend. It is, of course, being led higher by the technology sector. We are seeing very pronounced moves, and there is clear evidence of acceleration in a number of shares, most particularly within the semiconductors index. The rather incredible move we continue to see in advanced micro devices is not over just yet, despite the fact that it is almost 50% overextended relative to the trend mean. The fact that Tesla has rallied rather incredibly over the course of the last 8 months, that it has basically gone from $175 to $500 since June of last year. That's an historically large performance by any share, but for a company that so many people thought was going to imminently go bust, it is a profound change. It's almost comical. The agreement that Europe has forced upon some of the auto manufacturers like Fiat Chrysler, essentially funding Tesla's battery plant in Germany in order to meet its carbon credits. This is exactly a rerun of the kind of condition that allowed Tesla to prosper in the USA. It is now by far the most successful of the companies selling sedans in the US. Now, of course, the market in the US is dominated by pickup trucks and SUVs, but nonetheless, they are selling a highly desirable product. Having auto manufacturers fund the kind of upstart and highly disruptive company that is eventually going to try and put them out of business is almost comical in nature. It really does ram home the point that regulations and market interference designed by bureaucrats is unlikely to represent a growth phenomenon. And not least because it is probably going to eviscerate the domestic European automotive sector, which employs millions of people. This is a medium-term consideration for Europe. Fiat Chrysler has broken its downtrend. What it does suggest is that some of these shares have already priced in a lot of bad news. And when you see that the dividend yield is above the PE ratio, well, we know that there is somebody going to make a value argument. That suggests that there is near-term scope for potential upside, but that eventually we're going to run into the medium-term headwind of a company that has to pay for very significant carbon credits trying to compete against manufacturers that don't. And eventually, that headwind is going to create an existential crisis for a number of these companies, but particularly those that are in the mid-market. Well, when we look at what's going on in Europe, the Europe Stoxx 600 continues to hold the break above 400. And that was the upper side of what was a very lengthy trading range. So we are, I think, if we can consider that the base formation completion in Japan from a 30-year range, well, then that would suggest that this is also a completion of the base formation for Europe. And the valuation is better than it is in the USA, despite the lack of a growth argument. The growth for Europe and for a lot of those Asian indices is predicated on a global reflation trade, and that is very heavily dependent on the US expansion continuing and China starting to play a fuller role in it. With the easing of geopolitical tensions, at least temporarily, that is helping to sustain the bull markets. The continued provision of liquidity, I think, is by far the most important fact in this return to outperformance by stocks generally. When we then think about the bond markets, I think inflation is understated by any measure, but as long as the 10-year Treasury is continuing to hold below the 2% level, then I don't think anyone's going to be particularly worried about inflation. And we continue to see that the 3 month is trading at levels that would suggest there's going to be an interest rate cut within the first quarter. The other way of thinking about this, though, is that the Federal Reserve has been printing so much money that, but that effectively means they've been buying the short end of the curve and compressing yields at the front end. That is necessarily starting to have an effect on the yield curve. They're steepening the yield curve. And that is providing the kind of assistance that the financial sector requires. By steepening the yield curve, they are allowing banks to have more cash. They're creating a profit motivation for the banking sector. And of course, that is also potentially designed at easing some of the illiquidity crisis within the repo sector. The S&P 500 Banks Index continues to hold its breakout to new recovery highs, and the Regional Banks Index has also been holding its breakout to new 12-month highs. When we then think about the smaller cap sector, well, the Russell 2000 has also broken up and out of that range that persisted for most of 2019. I think the clearest conclusion that we can have here is that we're still in a highly liquidity-fueled environment, and the clearest potential loss or loser from that is the dollar. The dollar has held a sequence of lower rally highs since October, and the fact that that has coincided almost exactly with the expansion of the Fed's balance sheet, I think it is reasonable to conclude that the dollar is likely to continue to remain under pressure as long as the Federal Reserve is continuing to increase the size of their balance sheet. What that suggests is gold prices are probably consolidating, and it is quite likely that the breakout above the trend mean from back in May represents the support being found in the region of the trend mean back in May, and the subsequent advance is the beginning of a medium-term, if potentially even secular, bull market in gold, because of the clear intention of central banks to continue to devalue their currencies. Of course, that is positive for nominal prices, and in terms of stock markets, it's also positive for the bond markets, but the barometer against which currencies are valued is gold, and the continued strength of gold in a range of currencies is certainly a testament to the declining purchasing power of those currencies. And I think with that, I'll leave it for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.